What's up everyone, this is Dariusz Kalmarczyk, co-founder of MG Poland, JS Poland, AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the JavaScript Master Podcast. Today we've got a special guest from Brussels, Belgium, front-end engineer, JS geek, founder of BEJS, owner at B2A Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, Eamon Ben Amor. Hi, Eamon. How are you?
Hi, I'm very good. A lot of work lately, but it's going okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So for those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself and what you do.
So my name is Eamon. I work as a front-end developer, mainly with React. But I also do a lot of different JavaScript projects, etc. And I love JavaScript and I'm a big React enthusiast. So,
how did your adventure in programming begin?
Since I was a kid, I used to watch the IT people in movies with a lot of screens and doing some hacking, etc. So since I was a kid, I wanted to do something with computers or to be a pilot, which is very different. But then when I was in school, around maybe 14 or 15, I had few courses of programming at school and I got hooked. So since then, I've been doing programming on my own. I also did the university bachelor in computer sciences applied to management. So we had computer sciences lessons, but also economy and financial and accounting. So basically everything related to business lessons as well. And since then, I've been doing programming mainly with JavaScript, even though I started my career as a full stack developer doing JavaScript and PHP with Symfony at that time. But it's been maybe 11 years that I'm doing just JavaScript. When I started my career, we were using jQuery for almost everything and vanilla JavaScript a little bit. Then when I moved to front-end, I also worked with Backbone at the time, which is now dead. I worked also a little bit with Angular, JS and Angular 2, and then I moved to React. And from there, I also worked a little bit with web components and did HTML. So I think I did all of them.
What was the inspiration behind the BEJS and React Brussels conferences?
So basically a few years ago when I arrived to Belgium, a friend of mine basically dragged me to a conference. I wasn't a big fan of conferences because we don't have conferences in Tunisia. And so my friend dragged me to this conference and I was amazed because you see the speakers going on stage like rock stars and the atmosphere and the people are so nice and so kind to each other, etc. And so that conference was in Amsterdam. So when I got back to Brussels, I wanted to be part of a community and go to conferences here. But we didn't have anything about JavaScript at that time. There were just one company that was doing meetups, but it was a training company and it was like 100%, this is an intro, please buy the course. You see what I mean? So it wasn't really that interesting. And so I wanted to create the community for like the Belgian JavaScript community for quite some time. But then I got like, I think for 2 or 3 years, I procrastinated about the idea. And then at some point, I had a very nice relationship with a consulting company, a big one in Belgium. And they had offices, etc. So I proposed the idea to them. And like at first, I told them, look, for the first meetups, we'll probably be just 5 or 6 people just playing around and coding. So we just need a table and that's it. But then when we announced our first meetup, we had like 50 or 60 registrations in 2 days. And I was like, oh, okay. So I had to call that company, and the thing was that it was a pretty big one. So they had room for the entire people, and we ended up being like 45 people for our first meetup. And basically, this is how the community started. But then, I don't know if I should say this, but I kind of took opportunity of COVID when COVID happened, because when COVID happened, we started doing meetups online. And for me, that was a very good opportunity to be able to actually bring international speakers to our meetups, because we wouldn't be able to afford flying them in, etc. And so I took that opportunity and started doing several meetups online with people from Blitz, from Next, etc. And then it just hit me. Like I said, actually, I could just organize a conference online, and that way I don't have to spend that much money flying people in, etc. And that's what I did. So the first conference, since I'm really into React, etc., I actually organized the first React Brussels. It was in 2021, and it was a pretty good success. So we had around 200 people watching the stream. A lot of people were excited about it. The speakers really liked it as well. And that's what pushed me to be able to the next year, the year after, when COVID stopped or was not that dangerous anymore, to be able to organize our second conference, which is BGS Conf. And it is more focused on JavaScript, basically. And since then, it became kind of a tradition. Like, it's always the same weekend of for BGS Conf. It's the second weekend of May. For React Brussels, it's the second weekend of October. And we do these every year now. We're planning on doing more conferences, but these are still just ideas for now.
So can you give us an overview of topics that were covered at the last edition of conferences?
Basically, we had a crazy lineup for this conference. I think it was our best lineup so far. We had Mishko, who is the creator of Quick, Angular, and half of the things we use at work, who talked about Quick and resumability and how you can actually improve the performance of React components with Quick. We had Ryan Cognato, the creator of Solid, who talked about reactivity and signals. We had also a TC39 panel discussion. So the TC39 is basically the committee who decides on the specs of JavaScript. And we had a discussion where people could ask their question to actually the people that decide how we're going to work. So that was super fun as well. And we had a bunch of other amazing talks.
How do you choose the speakers for the conference? What qualities or experiences are you looking for?
We're actually like soon going to announce the speakers for like the first lineup of speakers for React Brussels. So this question is like very good for at this time. Basically, like what we do is that we do two waves of speakers. The first wave, we select them. We usually select 4 to 5 speakers that we know that are quite popular. We need these so that we can work on the marketing, and they can help us bring more visibility and bring more attention to the conference. And then once we select these, we open our call for paper. Now, for the call for paper, we anonymize it, which means that when we do the selection of the talks, the only thing that we see is the talk title and the talk description. And we do this so that our conferences are way more diverse, and we give the same chances to someone like Kenzie Dodds, who spent his life going to hundreds of conferences per year, will have the same chance as someone who just submitted for the first time. And I think it's really working very well, because we had people write articles about us and people sharing tweets about how diverse our lineups are, and we gave a lot of chances to first timers. So every time we have a conference, we have at least two or three that are there for the first time for their in-person conference. And I like that.
Who is the BJS and React conferences addressed to?
Let's start with BJS Conf. BJS Conf is aimed at anyone who is using JavaScript. So mainly our attendees are back-end, front-end, full-stack developers, medium, senior, tech leads, anyone who is using JavaScript from any kind of development, even DevOps or stuff like that, will find interesting topics in BJS Conf, because we try to be as much abroad as possible so that everyone can enjoy it. And we try to do a bit of front end, a bit of back end, a bit of build tools. So it's kind of a mix. For React Brussels, of course, it's more for React developers. To be honest, we don't really have talks that are for beginners. It's mostly medium level or expert, more advanced talks. And it's aimed at React developers. But we also have some kind of like, we have different topics that might not be directly related to React, like GraphQL topics or TypeScript topics, but in some way it's still important if you are a React developer.
Do you offer also some workshops or hands-on session in addition to traditional presentations?
So we usually offer free online workshops that usually are provided by our sponsors who want to showcase a certain technology, but we don't offer paid workshops or pro workshops yet.
Can you share us a special story or highlight from previous conferences you organized?
Well, to be honest, it's difficult to choose only one story for me, but when I see that people come to our conference, they don't know each other and then become super friends, and then I see them on Twitter becoming like traveling the world and going to conferences together, or when I see that some of our volunteers got to find a job and now work in a company of one of our sponsors, that are like the best stories for me, because that's one of the main goals of the community. Something else that I'm really proud of here is that we also, one of the goals of the community is to showcase the Belgian talent. And we have few Belgian developers who came to our conferences as their first talk, and now they talk in conferences with several thousands of attendees, and every time like they send us an email or a DM on Twitter, and they say like, thank you so much, it's thanks to you, and thank you for the help and for believing in us, etc. And that is super nice as well.
What are your goals for the future?
For the conferences, I want these two conferences to become the main gathering of JavaScript developers in Europe. But at the same time, something that everyone likes about our conferences is that it's cozy. So we don't want to grow up to thousands of developers. We want to keep that cozy, family-like atmosphere where you can actually talk to everyone in the conference when you attend, and it creates some kind of atmosphere that you don't find in other very big gatherings, and that's where I want our conference to go. I want also to showcase more and more the Belgian talent, and to be able via these conferences to support open source, because you know open source financing is very difficult, and that is why we give 10% of all our profits always to open source projects, basically. And for now, it is not much, but the idea is that to grow up until a point where we will be really able to help support open source.
So this was my last question about the conferences. And as you said, you are a big fan of React.js. Why?
I think it's a matter of taste, but the reason I like React that much is that I'm very productive with it. When I remember the time it took us to do stuff in Backbone or Angular.js and the amounts of bugs that come out of nowhere, it's crazy how fast and how productive I can be with React. From one side, because I know it, but from another side, it's because it's just JavaScript. Like if you want to map or do a loop or something, you just use JavaScript. You don't go and do some itch with some kind of weird syntax that looks like HTML or you see what I mean, like the ng4 and stuff like that. For me, it's way more natural to work just in JavaScript. You want to iterate over something, you do a map or a for each, that's it. And the React mental model as well is very good, because I mean, now all of them are like component, are using the component mental model. But when React came out a few years ago, when you had to think in components and your component is just a function from a state, it was amazing to and so easy to work with React. So that's why I'm a big fan of it.
Can you give a brief overview of what's new in React?
There are different things that make React 18 so trendy, let's say. But I think the main point and topic to talk about when it comes to React 18 is prioritization. What the React team thinks is that in order to get very interactive apps and good performance for apps, the right solution is to work on prioritization and scheduling. And this is mainly because they think that whatever performance you can improve with your framework, it's always nothing compared to the amount of application code that you're going to add on top. And so you cannot improve. If you improve just the framework, you will still have issues, because you have, especially for very scalable apps and very large apps, you have a very big code base for the application code and the business logic. And so that's why they think that it's better to prioritize the tasks. And the idea is that you will be able, with React 18, we can discuss that more in detail later, you will be able to say to React, this behavior is important, so I don't want you to block it, while saying that another behavior is not that important, so it's secondary, and then that behavior can wait a little bit. And so the idea is that with these with these possibilities, you will be able to give importance to the very interactive parts of your app while giving a lower priority to the others.
What is concurrent rendering mode or concurrency in React 18? Can you explain its importance and how it works?
Yeah, so as we discussed a bit earlier, it's all about prioritization. We all know that JavaScript is single-threaded. And so, I mean, you can emulate multi-threading using service workers and all of that, but that's out of the question here. Like, let's say you have a list of items that you want to filter. And you have an input that changes a state, and according to the state, you filter the items. If you have 100 of them, it's fine. 500, it's fine. But what happens if you have 5,000? If you start typing, then your rendering will take a lot of time each time, and then you will have a very laggy experience, which is really bad for user experience. And so the idea here is that with React 18, you will be able to say to React, hey, look, the input changes are very important, so I want you to focus on that. And then you say that the changes to the filtering of the lists are not that important. And so you can take them, you can take care of them when you have time. And we can do that using the new hooks that are available in React 18, like use deferred value or use transition, basically. Now, the thing is that you could say, okay, but I can use a debounce, for example, to avoid that issue. But the thing is that with a debounce, you are basically reducing the experience to everyone. What I mean by that is that if you do a debounce on the input, everyone will have to pay to wait for that little amount of time for the debounce to work. While if you are doing that with the special APIs provided by React 18, you will have to do it only for the people, you will impact only the people that actually need it, because the people that have only 10 items in their list, they will not be impacted, if you see what I mean.
Can you elaborate on how concurrency in React 18 improves the performance and overall responsiveness of the interface?
If you are able to give more power to the developers, and by giving them the ability to prioritize some work over another work, then the actual applications will feel more and more interactive. And why is that? Because as I said, like if we go back to the example of the input, we will say that the actual typing of the input is important. And then when people type in the input, they will not see a lag. And while we can say to React for the display of the list, since it's something that is not yet important, and you don't have to show it until the user actually stopped typing, and then for that work, you can put it in a second place. And that's how it makes our life easier, because we can easily say, this is important, so keep working on it. This is not that important, keep it for later. And that's how the apps become way more interactive, basically.
Functions such as start transition and use deferred value being available to developers. Can you explain what those are and how they are used in practice?
To go back to our example with the input, so the start transition comes from the hook use transition. And basically what you can do is that you can wrap a certain state change inside of start transition, and that will tell to React that state change is of lower importance. And so in our case, what you will do is that with the input example that I gave, is that when you are going to wrap the set search value inside of the start transition. And then React will work on the display of the list and the rendering of that state change when it has time, because it's of a lower priority. And while keeping the input still relevant and interactive for the user. Something else that the use transition gives is the is pending. So you can always indicate to the user that there is something going on, which helps avoid issues where people would say, oh, but that's not what I wanted. So you can always, for example, add an opacity or a loading indicator while you are doing the work for the to display the items. But something to note here, and it's very important, is that use transition and use deferred value, both are, they add more rendering to the UI. And so it's not recommended to use them everywhere. You have, my point with that is that don't try to solve a problem that you don't have. Like, if you don't have performance problems, don't go and start using use transition and use deferred value everywhere. But I think I forgot to say what use deferred value is. So in the case where you have access to the state change, you can use start transition. But if, let's say, you have just a list of items that you want to display, and you don't have access to the state that changes that value, in that case, you can use deferred value, which basically does the same as the start transition. It's just recommended to use deferred value only when you don't have access to the state. If you have access to the state change, then it's better to use transition.
Can you talk about suspense and server component and what they will bring to the future version of React?
Suspense basically lets you show a fallback, a loading state, while a certain part of the UI is not ready to be displayed. And suspense for the client was available already since maybe 2 years or something like that. And you could easily use it for lazy loading and data fetching on the client if you are using some specific libraries or if you wrote your own function. But now with React 18, what they added is that they added suspense for server-side rendering. And what this means is that, let's say you have a certain page that you want to display. So you have the header, the layout, and then you have one of these components that is, for example, getting the comments of that post. And that component is very difficult, very slow. So before that, if you were using server-side rendering, you would have to wait until all of your HTML is loaded and then send it to the client. While what you can do here is, by using suspense, you can actually defer and send the loading state, so the fallback that you provide to the suspense, to the client. And then it will wait until the actual component loads the data that it needs, and then sends it as a second time to the client, and then it will do a selective hydration where it will basically just hydrate that part that is that you just sent instead of, again, the entire page. So that is how suspense will make it way easier and way better for people to actually use server-side rendering.
Is this idea similar to how Quick works?
The difference between Quick is that Quick executes the code only when needed, while for React, it does the hydration anyway. So that's why they talk about hydration versus resumability.
React 18 allows for the grouping of updates, processes of multiple states. Can you discuss how this impacts the performance of rendering?
One of the things that React improved in the version 18 is the automatic batching of state updates. So let's say you are doing a few state updates, like, for example, you are updating the loading state and updating the data. before React 18, these were batched only if they weren't inside of an async function. So they were batched if you do it in a nullable function, but if you put them inside of a set timeout or fetch or something similar, then they will not be batched. And every state update means a render. So if they are not batched together, then it means that it will React will do two re-renders because of these two set state statements. And so what React 18 helped with is that now automatic batching is out of the box working for even async functions. And so it removes the amount of renders, which removes work on the JavaScript thread and makes it more performant, let's say.
What are some examples of priority updates and transition updates in the context of React 18?
What you consider as transition updates would be updates to the state that are not important. What I mean by that, important to the interactivity of the app. Go back again to our input example. The fact that the user, when he is typing, when they are typing, they see each key press as soon as they press it is very important. The fact that they have to wait a few milliseconds before they actually see the result of the filtering is of lower priority. Because imagine if you have 5,000 items to filter, and every time I click or press on the button, then I have to wait for 3 seconds until I get until I can see actually that the letter is there. That's a horrible experience. And basically, with React and prioritization again, it makes it look that it's instant, if you see what I mean.
Therefore, how do you see the future?
To be honest, I'm a bit skeptic there. What I mean by that is that in my experience, most of the apps that are being built with React and why React became so mainstream, these are business apps that do not do server-side rendering, that are using Create React App or similar starters. But they are these 80% of the apps will not be able to actually get all of the power and all of the impact of the React 18 changes. And that, for me, is a bit, how can I say, like, it's too bad for them. Because basically, like, as an engineer working on an app that is behind the login screen, there will be no way we will get funding to actually rewrite everything in Next.js, because that's the only way we can use React Server components right now, or Remix, or something like that. And so what happens is that people are not going to actually benefit from all of these powerful changes unless they are working with Next.js or Remix. And that is why basically when React 18 came out, most of the React team said the only way right now to be able to use React 18 is to use Next.js. Now, I don't know if Remix is using server components as well yet, but and something else that that is really important is that lately there started to be more and more problems with library maintainers about how to support server-side rendering React server components, basically. And it's creating a lot of pressure on the library maintainers. And one of the really good things about React is its ecosystem. So if these library maintainers start moving away from React, or the ecosystem starts shrinking a bit, it might become a problem. It's not yet, and I'm sure that React will stay one of the most used technologies for front-end development, and then in the next years. But it's still something that is that people should think about with React 18.
What kind of person is Ayman? How do you see yourself?
When people ask me this question, I usually say that I'm the funny guy of the group. So I'm a funny person. I like taking things not that seriously, enjoying everything I do and having fun. I try to be as kind of possible to people, and I think I'm good at it. I'm also ambitious, and I tried my best to be as kind of possible and as helpful as possible to other people. And yeah, that's a summary.
Amazing. You organize conferences. It takes a lot of time and took a lot of energy. So the question is, do you have some hints for our listeners, for us, regarding self-organization?
I have a lot of advices that I should actually give myself as well. It's always a struggle. For to be self-organized, you need to fight your instincts on a daily basis to be able to do the right thing and not overthink or not go do multitasking, because basically multitasking doesn't exist. When you focus on something, you need to focus on it. And it's very difficult in my use case because I have my own company. I work as a consultant for 40 hours a week. And then on top of that, I organize meetups and conferences. So it's a lot of different topics that you have to think about on a daily basis, especially that some of these topics are not my main job, like marketing, Google ads, Twitter ads, social networks, and how to create engagement and community building, etc. These are not my main skills. I like coding. And so even creating small visuals to be able to share things, it takes me a lot of time to do that. And all of this is hundreds of topics that you have to think about on a daily basis. And if you're always thinking about something else, you can't have this state of deep work where you can actually do the most important work of your day. So my advice there is that to use as much as possible of planning, plan everything in advance, plan your days, your weeks, your months in advance. It doesn't mean that there is always stuff that happens and you will adapt. But try to plan as much as possible so that you can actually focus on the most important things that you need to focus on. And then journaling is also something that is very important, I think, because it makes you think and plan about what to do. So when you wake up in the morning, you take a small piece of paper or journal and you just write what you are going to do. And when you write that, you are actually already plan in your mind what you're going to do. So that helps as well. And then to be able to kind of forget about the things that you don't need and that are not important. For me, meditation works. For some people, it might be religion or yoga or something like that. But for me, meditation works. And it's just like trying to find 5 or 10 minutes where you try to not think about anything else. and it works pretty great for me.
So what about your work-life balance?
So basically, to be honest, I cannot give a lot of advice there because I'm really bad at it. Like, since I started working on the community, my weeks are like 60 or or 70 hours of work. Because as I said, I have to work 40 hours. Apart from that, I have my own company to manage. And apart from that, I have the community to manage and all of the different topics that I need to manage for all of these things. And so I'm pretty bad at it, but I'm trying to improve. I try to do more sports. I try to go out for walks. I try to have at least one day per week where I try not to even open the computer. But it's difficult. It's difficult when you have a conference coming and a lot of decisions to take and a lot of research to do. It takes a lot of time, but I'm trying to improve it.
Things you are proud of.
There is a couple of things that I'm very proud of. And organizing a conference, an international conference, having people like Tejas Kumar, like David Kushid, like Carl Simpson, Ryan Carniato, Mishko, like the superstars of the front-end development and the JavaScript world, came to our conferences. That is something that I'm very proud of. I'm also very proud of what I accomplished as a developer. Because when I started my career, there was a point where I was like, maybe I will just stay like an average developer. You know, like as developers, we spend most of our time fighting with imposter syndrome. Like, even after 12 years of experience and hundreds of JavaScript projects with different technologies, there are times where I still question, like, how, like, maybe I'm not that good at my job. But at the end of the day, I'm very proud of the fact that I kind of managed that, and I'm proud of the different projects that I worked on. The first conference that I organized, I was alone. Nothing, no one else, just me organizing the entire conference from A to Z. That was like crazy few months. But I did it, so I'm very happy about it.
Definitely. Last question. A book, books, or maybe movie you can recommend to our listeners?
So for me, my favorite book is called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I don't know if you know that one.
I know that one, yeah.
It's so nicely written, and it's so nice to read. And also, like, it kind of helped me let go of the non-important things. You know, I used to get pretty angry driving my car because of traffic jams, or pretty angry because something didn't happen the way I wanted it, and it just make, like, it's not important. If it's not something that is critical to you as a person, just leave it there, and you shouldn't spend time on it or spend time angry because of it. And that really helps, especially when you have that many things to do, is that to know when you have to actually care or give a fuck, and when you have to let it go and just don't care about it.
Amazing. Amen. Thank you so much for this great conversation, for your time. And it was an honor for me to host you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It has been very nice and a big pleasure for me to be here. And we hope to see you at one of our conferences, or maybe in another podcast.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.